Hello, fellow Vault Hunters. I'm J. Michael Tatum, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
Hello and welcome to Press X, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and we are on part two of our EGX 2016 special.
Yeah, it's funny enough because we're there 2 days, so we've got a part for each day.
But yeah, there was a lot to cover, and like I say, we mainly focused on the indie games because, well, they were really fun and accessible, and they need it. Well, all the attention, I think.
There was a lot of horror stuff, so we got like one representative of that. There was a lot of Metroidvania stuff, so we got like a representative of that, I believe. And we just try to get something for everything.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff that we got was really, really unique.
Oh, yeah. Is that your way of linking into the first game?
Well, depends which way you look at it.
I'm taking it as that. Rob's also here. Hello, Rob.
Hello.
The first game we're going to hear an interview for is my favourite game now. Ryan can probably vouch for how long I spent here.
Too long.
Because okay.
The sign that they have, it's like the stall that they have, this one was captured in my eyes and I'm thinking, that looks like an interesting RPG. Let's go and have a look at that. I was wrong. I was wrong, Rob.
Okay.
Because it has like neon. Neon's very popular in indie games right now, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think this one does it well. This is Mechazoo. And bit of interesting story, but here go into it, the guy who interviewed a bit more detail. But essentially, this is a thing he did as a student and liked it so much that it made a company and turned it into a full game.
Okay.
Which is really nice. But essentially, it's sort of an interspecies platformer in the mold of 1980s platformers. And I felt really at home playing this. This felt like I gave sort of an unfavourable review to, what was it called? Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Because I think it kind of pandered a bit too much. Where Mechazoo, I think, gets the 1990 nostalgia platformer vision perfect.
Well, it can't. I'm looking at the images of it, and it's really colourful, but it's colourful in the way that games like Crash Bandicoot were colourful.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to sort it out. It's sort of a mashup of all your favourite 90s platformers.
And Pandemonium. I felt that in it a bit as well.
Pandemonium?
Yeah.
Okay.
A game which everybody has forgotten about.
Except me.
Yeah. And me. but yeah, we'll let them guys talk about it for themselves. This is Mechazoo.
Hi, Rob here again, and we're at EGX 2016, and I'm here with Mark from the Good Mood Creators, and you're here with Mechazoo. What is a Mechazoo?
Mechazoo is basically a 2D platformer in a 3D world. So throughout the game, it's a very fast, flowy platformer. You control pairs of animals, and you switch between them on the fly, each animal having its own separate ability.
The question has to be asked with something as wild as that, but where did the original idea actually come from?
So this started off as a school project.
Oh, wow.
We're all just fans of, platformers. We all grew up in the 90s playing all those games. So we just set out to create the platformer I always wish we had as a kid.
It's unlike anything, really, because it changes itself constantly with each new animal. Is there specific animals that you look at and you think, yes, we could use them in the game?
Yeah. So we didn't want to just create, a basic platform with just, like, jump button and action button. So instead of jump, we decided to switch animals. And each animal has, the kinesthetic kind of properties that the animal would actually have. So, somewhat.
So what, which part comes first, the animal or the level?
They both kind of integrate. So the animal came first and then the levels were built around the animal pairs.
Because they're very unique. The art design as well is a key part of it. I mean, the title kind of suggested it, but it's not just straight cute animals like from old 1990s platformers.
Yeah.
It's very, very unique art style as well.
Yeah, so we just wanted to... We like the kind of dichotomy between like the natural world and mechanical world. We wanted to play with that and just create something very vibrant that sucks you in and, that you can be fully immersed in.
So you say it started off as a student project.
Yeah.
When did it become this little, this step extra, past that to its own actual project to go out into the world?
So we graduated at school from Digipen, which is the Game Design Institute in Washington. And right after we graduated, we decided to start up the company and just start making the game. So that was 4 years ago now.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. It's a long production cycle, and it really does show it's very polished, very attractive, and very fun, you know. But what platforms is MechaZoo going to be on?
It's coming out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, Mac, Linux, eventually Nintendo.
Oh, fantastic.
Launching, we're hoping, by the end of October, early November.
Well, where can we find about your studio, your games, and MechaZoo online?
So you can go to goodmoodcreators.com. Or you can find us on Twitter at GoodMoodCreator or at MechaZoo Game, and search for MechaZoo Game on Facebook.
Outstanding, and thanks for talking to us, and good luck with the game this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back. So, that was MechaZoo.
My new favourite game.
It sounds really interesting. So, is it a platformer then with or kind of a puzzle platformer type thing?
Well, it's just puzzle in the sense that you change between species. And what I think is fascinating is they're just picking things from the animal kingdom, which have a natural jump. So there's no jump button.
Yeah.
It's like a force yourself button, like these things do. So, yeah, you can force yourself to jump harder.
Yeah, I found, like, every time you switched animal, it's sort of like the play style changed. It felt like a different platformer. The example would be, was it an armadillo? You switched to the armadillo and it became, like, very Sonic-like.
Well, yeah, Sonic. I mean, the characters in the demo was a frog. Armadillo, I assume that's what it was, but I wasn't sure. And a kangaroo, which I got by beating a boss. Flukily beating a boss. Yeah, this is fun. You know, I had a great time playing that one.
So is it just animals, or does it go down to insects as well?
I don't think they wanted to reveal that. But even if it's just sticking to the animal kingdom, there's loads of territory they could sort of go to.
Yeah, rabbits, frogs, kangaroos, marmosets. Tigers can jump. They jump at people and eat them.
I think that's going a bit more bloody than the intent of the series. The game is looking at, you know.
Dolphins. Will it have a water level where you have dolphins that jump out of the water?
Maybe.
Because then there's a conspiracy theory.
If they have the dolphin, that was a 1990s
exactly
platformer, which I don't think was very good, but you know.
Yeah, but the thing is, everyone's saying that, looking at some of the blurb, some of the stuff that's going on, you know, the press around MechaZoo, everyone's saying it's a Sonic-inspired platformer, so maybe Sega have their hand in this somewhere, and maybe they're going to use this as a testing bed for a new Echo the Dolphin game, and they're going to do a level based on Echo the Dolphin.
No. Sonic, Sega were there in their own right. These are completely independent. I like your theory, but nah, it's not buying. I'm not buying it. Sorry.
Do you know what it is? It's because I watched a video recently with John Oliver where he's talking about internet conspiracy theories.
Well, that'll do it. Yeah.
And now I just want to make up my own.
Yeah. Is there anything from the weekend that you particularly enjoyed, Ryan? Not game wise, just general experience wise.
I think you can also vouch for me on this, Rob. But the game that I probably enjoyed the most of the show, that was, like I say, just unique, it felt fresh and different, was Snake Pass.
Oh, I hate you.
We'll go into context on why.
No,
we'll get context, I think, on the other side.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this game.
We'll tell you, we'll come to it, you know, at the other end, because I think this needs a bit of context from the guy who was, like, really interesting.
Okay.
In his background, the way. But yeah, here is a Snake Pass.
This is Ryan from The Geek Show at EGX 2016. Now, we've all played Snake, but today I'm joined by Seb of Sumo Digital to play Snake Pass. Now, tell me, what is Snake Pass and how does it evolutionise the snake genre of games?
The snake genre of games. Well, Snake Pass is a physics-based platform puzzle game where you play as a snake. So unlike the old-school Nokia top-down view, you get an actual proper 3D view of your snake. And everything is fully physical. That means his whole body motion, no animations. It's all driven by actual physics and maths. And it's all about mastering gravity, friction, balance, and learn to master the controls of this cute little character and navigate different levels.
That's a lot of things to be good at. It's harder than Dark Souls.
No, absolutely not. No, and definitely not as punishing.
But where did the idea come from?
That's actually quite an interesting story, I think. Last year in October, you know, Sumo Digital, traditionally we make AAA titles. We were working on Dead Island 2, Crackdown 3, big games. But we've always had the desire to try to make something of our own. And last year in October, the company gave everybody the opportunity for one day to work on whatever they wanted to try to produce a good game idea, which is called a game jam. During that period, I was actually trying to learn the Unreal Engine. So I'd been experimenting at home, trying to make a rope that would move when the player walks into it. Quite a simple technical challenge, I thought, but it was trickier than I initially thought to make. And once I had it working, I forgot to attach it to the ceiling, and it sort of fell down in a very interesting, satisfying way. And I said, wow, I've never seen anything like that. I'm going to try to make a controllable rope. Mm. So initially, I made a rope that just slides around, and then the next step was, it's going to be a snake.
So it's sort of just a Frankenstein, basically, just appeared out of nowhere.
It's a bit of a coincidence, yes, absolutely. But then again, I have a biology background, and during university, I owned two pet snakes. So I know exactly how they move, and I know when their muscles contract, because I've held them in my hand so many times. Yeah. So that definitely helped me to actually take it from a rope to a real physics snake.
Right, so what's sort of the objective for a level in Snake Pass?
There's a relatively simple story. It's a puzzle game, so you really only need an excuse for you to puzzle, to solve the little puzzles.
Yeah.
And there's a simple story. You wake up one day, you're supposed to be migrating to the sunny peak of Snake Pass. All your friends have already left because you overslept, and when you wake up, you try to catch up with them. But as you reach the gate that normally connects Snake Pass together, you find out that something or someone has removed the magic glimmers from the gates. And the main objective of each level is find the three glimmers, reactivate the gate, and you slowly get higher and higher up the mountain to try to get to your friends.
But I haven't seen a physics game like this, and it looks absolutely fantastic. And
thank you.
When can everyone find Snake Pass? When's it available?
It's going to come out in the first quarter of next year, so around February, March.
What platforms?
All major consoles and Steam as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Welcome back. So, Snake Pass then.
I had a go at this on the Saturday. We interviewed him on a Friday. We popped back because we tried to do it. Every game we talked to. I had a go first while the next interview, or one of the next interviews, was being recorded. And it's really hard, you know, because when you talk about platformers, you talk about a character who has legs.
So it's a platformer with a character that doesn't have legs?
Yeah.
Well, you play as a snake, so...
Exactly, yeah. And they talk about having to go side to side to get up momentum to move faster. You got like a little bird companion who can pick up the side of the back end of the snake. And yeah, it's just really challenging. But once you get your head into the zone of how this game works, it's challenging in a way which I can see so much potential for it.
Okay.
Yeah, it reminds me of like Octodad in a sense, but Octodad was sort of very silly of a concept. And this, it's like it's taking the same idea, but it's actually more well thought out. And again, I understand what Rob's saying. It's hard because it plays, you basically have to move as if you were a snake. It's very, very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's a great concept. I mean, the guy of Sumo Digital just basically said he was watching his pets and thought, hang on a minute.
Okay.
But yeah, Rob is very upset because he spent a very long time trying to do the level, and then I had a go, briefly picked up the controls, and I finished it really quickly.
Yeah,
this
but
is,
don't you
this is Brian's like track record.
Yeah.
When we, in the office, we played Ronin, and that game, I struggled so much with, then I said, have a go, Ryan, you might be okay. Did it first time.
Ronin wasn't the first game he did that on, though. Remember,
he has a habit of this.
Remember Titan Souls.
Yeah. You're evil, Ryan.
Ryan has a habit of doing this to Rob when it comes to indie games. I think the first game was Titan Souls, and you were stuck on that boss for ages, and then Ryan came along and did it on like his first or second attempt, and you ended up crawling on the floor, Rob, if I remember rightly.
That was Ronin, that was.
Was that Ronin?
Yeah. It's a very unforgiving game, Ronin.
Yeah, I know. I tried playing it myself, and it's really hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to keep like stopping and then readjusting like what I was actually doing, because I keep, you're so used to just, oh, I want to go over there, so you point the stick in that direction, but it doesn't work like that. You've got to keep,
it takes ages if you do it like that. Yeah,
you've got to keep flicking from left to right and get that motion that a snake would move.
I went kamikaze snake as well and ended up jumping off the top, like one of the structures. He said, I've never seen that before. Yeah. And I missed completely. I missed the collectible completely. Oh, well.
Okay.
But they've embraced the mechanics and the concept really well, and I really look forward to playing more of that. I want to see just how challenging and interesting it gets.
It's really interesting, you know. With this and MechaZoo, the platforming game community, they're sort of looking at, you know, the 1990s thing where you had animal mascots.
Well, Snake Pass is more of a puzzle game, but it's just got a bit more depth.
Yeah.
Oh, no, but it's just the fact that they're taking animals and they're doing it realistically rather than, oh, it's a bandicoot. Of course he can jump. He wears shorts and everything. They're just saying, right, these are actual animals. Let's put them in the game context. And I think these two games are brilliant examples of what can be achieved.
See, I like the idea of using an animal as an actual animal in a game, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's something that's, it's not a new idea, but it's certainly a novel one.
No, well, it's not a new one, by a long shot, but an actual animal, not just the anthropomorphized one. These are genuine animals.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, having an animal in a game, most of them tend to cop out with something that has legs.
Yeah.
You know, or something that has wings.
Like so Crash Bandicoot again, that's what I'm going back to. Because it's an easy target.
Well, it's not that it's anthropomorphized. I mean, look at the horse from Zelda Ocarina of Time. You know, it's just a horse, but it has legs. So it can do the whole forward, backward, side to side thing. But if Link was, say, riding on a slime, how would that work?
Well, the thing with the horses in like Zelda games, it's basically just a car, isn't it?
Yeah, with legs.
It has no personality. It's just it can be debated whether it has personality, but it's effectively used as a car.
Yeah,
Help you get around. And that's kind of its main point.
You know, video game creatures without legs. You're talking about stuff like slimes. So how would a slime move?
Slowly.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we're on the animal bent, because this is another one when the press release came through for this one to get the interview. I was like, yes, straight away, because it's basically one of the most unique games at the whole convention, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
These are a studio from the Philippines. One of the guys we talked to, Ryan, which was really confusing because Ryan was like recording, I was interviewing, and Ryan stood there talking for Political Animals. Names of things, you know? but this one, I think I'm just going to let the guy explain it himself, because, again, it's just almost beautiful what it's representing in video games and how different it is to everything else, but still keeping within that sort of the trifecta of animal things that we're talking about here. And this is Political Animals.
Okay, cool.
Hello, Rob here, and we're at AGX 2016, and I'm joined by Ryan from Squeaky Wheel Studios. And you're here with a very unusual game, Political Animals. What are Political Animals?
Yeah, so Political Animals is a political strategy game. It's like a turn-based strategy game, kind of like Civilization and some of those larger strategy games, but compressed into a much smaller, like one or two hour bite-sized version of that kind of game. And it's, since our company, our studio Squeaky Wheel, is based in the Philippines, it's loosely based on like third world politics and the kind of shady stuff that can happen there.
So I'm assuming the use of animals is to soften the touch.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it does soften the touch. You know, politics, obviously, is a very serious topic. But it also, in other ways, like having like the cute animal art, it makes the subject a little bit more subversive, because like you have these like cute animals doing some really shady stuff.
So, what's the genesis of an idea like this? Because it's so unlike anything. Basically, you did compare it to Civilization, mm-hmm. but just talking about politics or the animal kingdom, where did that idea begin?
So originally the game started out like it's like a game jam kind of game, and actually the original title was Party Animals. It was kind of a pun on political parties.
Yeah.
But when it was finally picked up by a publisher, so we're being published by Positech Games, who is actually also the creator of the Democracy series, so there's obviously some synergy there.
Hmm.
We decided that maybe Party Animals is a bit too... if you do a Google search, it'll lead you in all the wrong directions, so we changed it to Political Animals instead.
In a crowd like this, how is it going down, again, with it being so different to everything? Because the usual indie games, we're talking about platformers, we're talking about RPGs.
So it's done pretty well. We were actually also at PAX a few weeks ago, and it's done similarly. Like you said, it is kind of a niche, but you know, we knew that from the beginning. We expected that it would be a very niche game, and the people that come to play it will be, you know, kind of self-selecting, but that's totally fine. I mean, our market is global, so as long as we can, like, you know, hit that niche specifically, then we'll do okay. So anyone who comes by our booth, which is usually, like, there's usually at least two people, we're never empty. So that's a good sign for us that there is some interest, and anyone who sits down is usually, like, exactly the kind of person that would be into that kind of game.
Excellent. This isn't your first work on games, so what is your ethos towards making a game?
Yeah, so I'm definitely interested in these kinds of topics, like politics, prisons, and stuff. So our kind of motto in Squeaky Wheel is making games out of third world problems, and so we feel like we're bringing a unique perspective just because of where we live and the kind of issues that we have to deal with. And we want to try to, you know, like, make entertaining games out of that, but at the same time, you know, draw people's interest to those kinds of topics.
Excellent. So, Political Animals, what format is that going to be on, and can you announce when it's available as well?
Yeah, well, we're looking to launch, fingers crossed, looking to launch first week of November. It'll be on Steam initially for Windows and Mac. And assuming that you all go out and buy the game and we're successful enough, we're definitely looking to port it to consoles or tablets. If all goes well and we can afford to do that.
And where can we find you online?
You can find us at politicalanimalsgame.com. Our company website is squeakywheel.ph, so .ph for the Philippines. And you can find all of our contact info there, all on the Twitter and Facebook and all that.
Thank you for talking for us, and good luck with the game.
All right, thank you so much, and
And welcome back. Yeah, Political Animals. I had a nice little conversation with Ryan afterwards as well, how it sort of reminds me of Tropico in a way where it's sort of, well, I would say more Tropico, like some of the more old ones where it was very campy and silly, because it's very hard to... well, take something like political wise so serious when they're all really cute looking animals. But and then at the same time, he said, like, you know, it's a way to get people engaged, because it actually, you know, it deals with all the really harsh social issues. How did he word it? Sort of more third world countries, did he say?
Third world politics, which is much harsher, just general, yeah. Whether Corbyn's going to get re-elected or not.
Yeah, yeah, and the whole idea of corruption. And like I say, it's... don't take it off face value. It's actually really serious behind all the cutesiness.
It's just a way in, isn't it?
It's interesting that they've come out with a game called Political Animals at such a key point, because this year is the US presidential elections. We had the Brexit vote, which means if Labour opposition finally materialises, we may even face a new general election. Because we've currently got a Prime Minister that nobody voted for. So it's interesting that Political Animals has come out or has been announced at such an odd, changeable political time.
It's a perfect time, because a lot of people are much more politically aware than they ever have been.
That's what I'm saying. It's actually a very good time for the game to come out. But I've read some of the blurb around Political Animals, and I love the sound of it.
Yeah, it's very much a you game, this, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about Tropico, that's my type of game. But Political Animals kind of reminds me of that. But it also, for some reason, I think it's mainly the art style, it reminds me of kind of a base strategy game called Evil Genius, where you basically play the role of the evil genius. and you have your secret lair, and you have to kit out your secret lair in kind of... You remember Dungeon Keeper, Ryan?
I do, yes.
Yeah. In kind of a Dungeon Keeper style, you have to kit out your secret lair with all these different traps and henchmen and all sorts of things like that. You know, this, the art style of this kind of reminds me of that game of Evil Genius, but so much cuter. I mean, I love the design of Mousy. It's so simple, but
well, mouses are just generally cute anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, and Crocky's really fun as well. But who's the pig? I've forgotten his name. Is it Piggy or is it something else?
I'm not sure.
Because there's a whole selection of characters to choose from, isn't there?
Yeah, it's the interesting thing, you know. I hope it's a little bit longer than other, like, world management strategies. Like, Civilization's getting shorter and shorter.
I think it'll replayability.
But there's like a... the cutesiness of it, the prescience of it, and just the fact that it looks just so much fun, and there's not enough fun in the strategy world.
This is true.
Yeah, and it looks more like a strategy game that's more accessible as well.
We're not too
broad. It's still got some depth to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's definitely, well, it looks more accessible. Yeah. And it, again, like I say, Civilization, and a lot of these... Other, for example, like Paradox games, you know, really, really hard entry level.
We're moving away from Animal Kingdom now, I think.
Okay.
And I think Ryan's going to have to explain this one, because I think at this point I was still engaged in Mechazoo.
You were up to the neck in Mechazoo. And,
yeah, it kind of took me for a while. Owen and Ryan had a go at this one. The mannequin.
And yeah. We're not talking about that... 1980s romantic comedy, are we?
No, thank God. No.
I wish it was.
Okay.
But yeah, this is a horror game. We decided we'd do one horror game. And obviously there's a lot of horror games out, especially on PC. But this one, it's looking to push more of the narrative and more interesting storytelling as opposed to just really, really scary all the time.
Complete with soundtrack by Starship.
No, that's the movie, Rob.
I'm saying this horror game would be amazing if it had a Starship
that's
soundtrack.
That's a good point, because I thought the soundtrack for it was really, really good. Okay. But anyway, we'll show that interview off, and we'll be back afterwards.
Right, I'm here with Mitch from Two Tales, and ask about their game, The Mannequin.
Hey, yeah, so The Mannequin, it's a narrative horror game. It's set in this old, creepy London townhouse that's been abandoned since 1958. And the family that used to live there died under suspicious circumstances. And basically, you enter the house and you'll find out what happened to them. But there's this creepy mannequin. I mean, the game is called The Mannequin, so it's a little bit of a clue. But there is this creepy mannequin in the house that comes alive and it starts to follow you around. But as that happens, the house starts to change. And some of the rooms that you've previously gone in that were, like, dark and dusty and they're empty, they transform and they appear like they did in 1958. And these creepy mannequins are stood around talking, and they basically play out the family that used to live there. So through them, you'll find out eventually what happened to them and how they died.
I had a playthrough, and one thing I noticed about is the music and the sound effects really intensify the atmosphere. So what kind of stuff were you wanting to go for in terms of that? Do you just want to go like really sort of subtle and creepy, or just a single kind of musical vibe throughout the game?
Yeah, I mean, so much in horror is about the atmosphere and, like, tiny little details. And Lasse, our sound designer, has done a really good job to get the emotion, like, the feeling when you're playing. Like, you feel really unsettled. There's, like, little noises as you walk around. And that really heightens the general feeling of the horror.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like... a lot of the horror is down to in your own head. Like, there's not always anything there, but you think there is.
Yeah.
So it's the unexpected and the surprise.
So what were you trying to do that's different from other horror games? Because a lot of horror games are very similar. What were you trying to do different here to kind of make your stand out more?
Yeah, so we're aware that like loads of horror games have come before us, like loads of horror films. There's a lot of things that have been, you know, like done and dusted. Like people are kind of used to certain ways horror games play. So we're kind of aware of that, and we're trying to play on that a little bit, so we know generally what people's expectations are going to be.
Yeah.
And so sometimes things happen as you do expect, but then other times they don't, and we try and like keep you on your toes a little bit, so you never, like, you think you know what's going to happen, but sometimes it doesn't, and we kind of throw a little bit of a curveball for you.
So when's the game come out?
So we're aiming for March, April. We don't have a firm release date, but that's what we're aiming for at the moment, next year.
What kind of platforms are you mainly coming out
on? So we're launching on PC and Mac first, and we'll be looking at consoles later in the year.
Right, and welcome back to our EGX special.
Yes.
Part dos, or der, or two.
Yes. So
the second one.
The mannequin. Do you know, I think I've done a bit of subliminal messaging or subliminal preparation on you and Rob. Ryan?
Go on.
Right. Do you remember the adventure specials?
Oh, yes. God, no, not those.
Do you remember there was a section in a department store involving mannequins?
I try and get that
obscure reference to people. People won't get this one.
They won't get the reference, but you guys understand exactly what I'm talking about.
One thing, though, do go back and listen to those adventure specials. You'll find them on sort of the very front of our YouTube channel.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun.
If you like weird roleplay, then go for it.
Not that kind of weird roleplay.
Well, you say that. But yeah, the mannequin, really look forward to what that has to offer in terms of its story. I'm really intrigued to know more, but also terrified at the same time.
Well, the advantage to using mannequins, I suppose, is that you can do a lot more when it comes to kind of the body horror side of things. Because
that's
you can stick mannequins together in any which way, and it looks scary and freaky as it is.
You weren't there, man. You didn't see these mannequins.
You didn't, Rob.
I didn't see the mannequins, but I don't need to. The ones that are in the windows of Psyche scare the bejesus out of me.
But yeah, Rob knows this, but I'm a massive sucker for soundtracks, and I remember like this story that Rob always laughs at me about, but I was playing The Witcher 3 and I was walking through the woods, and the sound design was just that good that I really felt uncomfortable because I thought something terrifying was going to come and get me. And this was another perfect example of that great sound design in this game.
All right, fantastic. Sounds
yeah, I had to go at a horror game. I'm just trying to find the title of it because it was also odd. I'll find the title in a little bit. But you're basically transporting a doll around the decrepit house on a wheelchair, trying to get that doll warm. And I think, because you've got the headphones on, all these stands have the headphones on, it was just, okay, I'm done enough, it's too scary. I've got to go now. I've got to go.
Yeah.
I can't do this anymore. The sound design on these things is outstanding.
Yeah. Should probably go for something a bit more light-hearted now.
Go on then.
What do you have in mind?
Troll and I.
Is this about, you know, sort of the experience of being like not a normal internet user, and then you make best friends with somebody who just posts hurtful YouTube comments?
No, that's the sequel. No. It's the musical version of that. It's like the King and I.
So what is the Troll and I then?
It's basically a seamless co-op game where you play as a young boy and a troll, but it's a great co-op game, but I'll explain more in the interview. But yeah, this is Troll and I.
I'm Owen, and I'm with Bobby. We'll talk about the new game, The Troll and I. So nice to meet you, Bobby.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Would you like to tell us a little bit about the game?
The game's a 3D action adventure. It's a dual protagonist. You can play either Otto, who's a 15-year-old adolescent boy, or a 15-foot troll, and you can switch between them at any point or play it in couch co-op mode.
How's this game kind of differ to like similar sort of buddy type games?
Some of the buddy games out there, they don't allow you to take direct control of the other character. You can just command it around, tell it to do certain things, where we give you direct control of either troll or Otto, and you can switch at any point. But whilst you're in control of one of them, the other character takes sort of a dumber AI approach, because we couldn't allow you and then, you know, the troll just to go off and complete the game for you.
That's a good point. You've also brought it in as both a single player and a co-op. Was that the original intention, that it had to be a co-op as well? Was that something that kind of came across later on?
It just evolved, really. We were doing a single player adventure because we wanted to do something quite epic. And because we were switching between these two characters and doing things between them, we thought, well, it'd just be great, you know, if your mate came around, you could just join in at any point. So how the co-op works is it's jump in and jump out. So you can be playing the single player adventure. Your mate can come in, or your better half. Pick up the second pad, jump in, and when they leave, you can carry on playing the same adventure on your own.
Why did you pick a 15-foot troll? Was it because it was something different, something not done that you'd see before?
My business partner, Kevin, he writes children's books.
All right.
So he has had this story about a boy and a troll in his head for quite a while. So it's stemmed from there, really.
Oh, brilliant. So when's the game come out?
March 2017. It's coming out on PC, PS4, and Xbox One retail.
Welcome back. Okay, that was the Troll of Night. Now, a couple of things I want to bring up about this game, because I had a look at some of the screenshots from the game, and it doesn't half remind me of The Last Guardian.
I guess. You know, if the Guardian had dreads.
If the Guardian had dreads. But, I mean, it does remind me of The Last Guardian from the point of view that you've got a boy and you've got this big monster, and the monster is helping the boy get across various platforms and stuff like that, and carrying various things for him and stuff. And that is very much The Last Guardian's gameplay, isn't it?
But the boy also helps because, for example, there are monsters that you have to kill, and some of them are really small, and the troll will have trouble trying to kill them, so you need to use the boy in order to kill the smaller ones, and then the more bigger ones the troll takes care of.
Which is kind of
the big, the troll has problems, because I played the troll and Ryan played as the guy, Otto, I think the guy's called, and I just squashed and stood on the men, and you know.
But yeah, as the troll, it's easy to get overwhelmed because you're very slow and clunky.
So is this a two-player game, and you can't play it as a one-player game then, or is this a one-player game where you can play as two players?
It's a bit of both, really. It's seamless co-op. You can either switch between the two, or if you have like a friend or a partner that comes over, they can just hop in and take control of either Otto the boy or the troll seamlessly, and then they can also like hop out if they need to go or anything. So yeah, it's a bit of both, really. And I like that. I think it's good that more and more games are looking at the more couch play experience, because like I say, at this day and age, so many games focus on online co-op and multiplayer, and it's nice to just bring things back a notch.
So two people can seamlessly control the boy and his big hairy beast.
One or the other, yeah.
Troll, Rob. Troll.
It's definitely a hairy beast, though.
They both share a haircut. It might be some narrative thing in that.
Okay, so.
So this brings us to our last interview. And we talked to a studio, and they had multiple games there. I got pronunciation wrong, because anybody who listens to any of our shows realise I do not pronounce well.
You do not what?
Pronounce well. It was a joke, Rob.
You do not pronounce well?
It's a joke, yeah. But this is Ysbryd Games. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. It's Spirit in Welsh. And they had four games. We talked to them about two of them, but the games were Y2K, which appears to have members of the Eurogamer staff as the characters, is penned as a postmodern RPG. And the other one we didn't talk about was Cyberpunk Bartender Action, otherwise known as Valhalla. But we will let the guy in question that we interviewed describe that one, because, well, yeah, his description is better than anything I couldn't say. Brian, who we talked to. But the ones we did talk to them about, one was one of the most interesting looking things at the convention, which was She Remembered Caterpillars, and the other one was a very varied RPG called Masquerada.
Okay.
We'll let him describe it, because there's a lot of games to get through in this one.
These sound intriguing.
Rob here, and we're at EGX, and I'm here with Brian with Ysbryd. That's pronounced as much as I can get it right.
That's correct.
But we're talking about two games today, and the first one I want to talk about is She Remembered Caterpillars. Very, very interesting looking game. What is She Remembered Caterpillars?
Well, it's basically a puzzle game that makes use of color theory. You know, basically you've got, you know, like simple ideas of red plus blue equals purple, and we've got you're using these ideas to overcome obstacles. You can sort of see this current level is a very fungi related. Yeah. Sort of environment, and there are bridges that you need to cross, which of different colors. The characters that you control can actually combine colors or separate depending on the situation. So you're supposed to figure out how do I get these characters to the goal to proceed.
It says the description you've got on your stall. It says
invasive brain surgery. So how does it get from fungi pong to brain surgery?
I mean, so the it's a very interesting visual adventure with these cute little critters, but without going too deep into spoiler territory, these characters are actually sort of I guess the one way to put them would be they're nanomachines that are actually performing. As you go along the narrative, it's a kind of an intimate story about a daughter trying to bring back her father's, reconnect the father's memories through this sort of like advanced brain surgery. It's set in a fantasy world in the very distant future.
It's nice that puzzle games are incorporating a story. Mm-hmm. It's allowing a bit more of a diverse experience.
Right. Yeah. I think one of the inspirations for the game, the developers will tell you at least. The developers are Jumpsuit Entertainment. They're from Germany, and they're one of the inspirations for was Monument Valley.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very familiar with that.
Great, incredible aesthetics. M.C. Escher aside, the there was that interesting narrative very economical with their words, but you sensed there was something deeper going on. The relationships between the main character and that little cute pillar thing. So we tried to sort of dive into that sort of emotional relationship as well in our story.
Excellent. The other game you have here is Masquerade Songs and Shadows. What is Masquerade?
It's a tactical RPG, very inspired by games like Baldur's Gate and Dragon Age. So you have a tactical pause function. Essentially, it's an action RPG, but you can pause combat at any time, plan your attacks, figure out, okay, I want to position my party members here and there, and you can unpause to watch the action unfold, kind of take things at your own pace if necessary.
That's a very interesting hybrid of a lot of different types of RPG.
Right.
And I think that makes it stand out, perhaps, because RPGs are very, very popular.
Right,
There's a lot of them.
For us, actually, talking about standing out, because there are other games that use similar isometric action styles, similar to like Pillars of Eternity or Divinity: Original Sin.
Yeah.
But so rather than compete with those, we've created a greater focus on blending interesting combat with a heavy hitting storyline. Masquerade is set in a world where rather it's set in a city where magic is endowed upon people by wearing these Venetian masks, and these masks have sort of become a very sought after item of political power. So people who have the masks are like an elite class in society, and there's become a rift between the haves and the have, the folks who have masks and the ones who don't.
Yeah, you've also got two other games, but the question I want to ask is, they're very, very unique and diverse. What is there a sort of a common thread running through them that sort of defines what Isbrid games are?
Yes, you got it. A common thread, I would say, is that we, as a publishing label, we've been looking out for games that exude it's a very tired word, but unique. A unique sense of charm. The keyword here being charm, that we want people to be enchanted by the stories we're telling, the worlds that we've built, and we want people to come back to try the game and they be enamored with the world, and they want to come back after work and be like, this is where I want to be. And I don't want to just blindly shoot things up in Destiny or something. They want to discover more about the characters and the worlds that they've encountered.
Yeah, leave an imprint on you after you've turned the machine off, exactly.
Precisely, yeah.
And what formats would both She Remembered Caterpillars and Masquerade be appearing on?
So all our four games that are coming out will be on Steam, mostly at least PC and Mac. Masquerade will also be on PlayStation 4. And we have two other games. So Masquerade and She Remembered Caterpillars will be out later this year. We have another game called Valhalla that's already out on Steam. Game Y2K might come out, we're looking at early 2017 for Steam and PS4.
And where will we be able to find all of these things online?
Each of them have their own website. Masquerade would be at masquerade.com. She Remember Caterpillars has a special site called caterpillar.solutions. And Valhalla is a special one. You have to look it up at waifubartending.com. It is a game where you are tend the bar and serve a cute girls in cyberpunk hell.
Oh, wow, that's unique.
Yes, it is. And Y2K is at y2krpg.com.
Excellent, and thank you very much for talking to us there, and I hope the games do very well.
I'm looking forward to it and hoping that games will mean something special to the folks who play.
Excellent, and thank you for talking to us there.
Thank you, Rob.
And welcome back. Yeah, She Remembers Caterpillar. I really like what they're doing. I think just like sort of puzzle games in general, that they actually have a bit more depth and story to them as opposed to just, well, puzzles.
Yeah.
But puzzle games were a dirty thing, dirty word for a long time.
Yeah.
Catherine didn't help that because that was a dirty game anyway, but, you know, the fact that they're coming to a place where they can like have a narrative.
Yeah, something more impactful, yeah.
And can't, communicate some really abstract feelings and ideas like She Remembers Caterpillars does.
Yeah.
Okay. What was your feeling on this one, Rob?
What, She Remembered Caterpillars or...
She Remembered Caterpillars, yeah.
See, I look at She Remembered Caterpillars and I've looked at some of the GIFs and some of the screenshots and stuff like that, and I like the look of it. I like the sound of it. The idea of a puzzle platformer that tells a story is something that really appeals to me, because I mean, I've talked about how I like the Professor Layton games loads and loads of times, and the main reason I like them isn't because of the puzzles, but because there's a story attached to them. You know, they tie them in a certain way, and I like the idea of that being applied in this really unusual way.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to have a go at, well, pretty much all the games, because they've got a really distinct design ethic. I mean, the game which was next to that one and was a Masquerada, and as I described it, it's taken like things from like Western RPGs, it's taken things from like action RPGs, JRPGs, and creating this very old world style RPG. I think it's positioned, you know, I never mentioned this in an interview because it's kind of a rude thing to say, but with them being so many RPGs, it's very hard to find your voice, find your uniqueness.
Yeah.
And the thing, with all the things that it has going for it, Masquerada, it's positioned itself in a really intriguing place. It was the most interesting looking RPG at the whole event, I think.
Yeah, in terms of the indies anyway, it was the only real RPG, I would say. Like, well, JRPG anyway. And I love the art style. At first I thought it was 2D, and then you look closer in, it's like, oh no, it's 3D, and it looks really nice.
Hmm. Cool. Well, I mean, one of the things that I've noticed about Masquerada is that, you know, they're saying it's an RPG, but the art style reminds me a little bit of the art style from Banner Saga.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they said that.
And from what I can tell, it's, you know, the gameplay is a little bit reminiscent of kind of the frenetic gameplay that you find in MOBAs.
To a degree, yes.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what they're pushing it as.
And so, that's, like, all the interviews down. Interesting stuff there. I hope some of those games made it onto your watch list, because we are very excited to play some of them a little bit more.
Definitely.
And the content for those games will be popping up on the website, on YouTube, and all sorts of manners and shapes and forms. So looking forward to that. But I guess, you know, we'll finish this two-week special of EGX. What did you think of it? You know, what were your takeaways from the whole thing, Ryan?
I was just blown away by, like I said at the very start of the first part, just how well the indies are doing now. And I'm glad that EGX are putting them at the front of the show as opposed to just like off in a corner somewhere, very secluded. And yeah, I'm just super happy for them. Everyone we met was absolutely lovely and pleasure to talk to. And the games are looking fantastic. So yeah, very good.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was refreshingly straightforward, I think. Everyone had its place, and everyone was just, well, it was just a very communal, friendly, welcoming place, despite it being this massive aircraft hangar, which holds thousands of people. It was a sold-out event. It was just ramp-packed for, like, at every point of the day, but it never felt like sort of big industry. It always felt like, you know, you just go into this place, you're just going to try out some games and talk to some nice people. And I think that is like the most, for me going for the first time, it'd be very easy to be, you know, overwhelmed by all of the massiveness and the attention-grabbing stuff which is going on.
Yeah.
But it never felt like that. It just felt like, oh, here we go, we're going to do some games, talk to some people. That's a very hard thing to achieve, I think.
Yeah, I agree. There is something for everyone.
How much of that do you think is down to the actual, the people who are going there to showcase their games being more down to earth, say, than...
It's a little bit of that, and it's a little bit of just how well planned it is by the Eurogamer people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're clearly learning with every new event and improving it with every new event and finding what works, finding what doesn't, and putting it in the right place. Like, some people have been complaining that it's in ENEC and it should go back to London because everything should be in London. But, honestly speaking, I think it's the perfect location.
I agree.
Yeah. It's in Birmingham, in the middle of the country. People can travel to it from wherever. It's really accessible.
Yeah. If it was in London, it'd be a pain in the backside to get to. To start off with,
I've been when it was in London, and it's a lot smaller, and it's more of a hassle to get down there.
Yeah,
and just in its place in Birmingham, it's like one train, it's like £2 to get the train over to the place itself. Yeah. It's like isolated; it's not going to get a lot of footfall from like people in surrounding places. It's just all the people are there for the same thing.
Yeah,
and it's just kind of. Really enjoyed it. It was great.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, I think we're at the end of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
Yeah, we look forward to next year. Hopefully we can make it there too.
Awesome.
Because, ideas. We've got ideas for Eurogamer.
Yes.
nice content for you all.
Yes.
Yeah, but anyway, thanks for listening, and you can support the show by going to our website and purchasing some of our lovely merchandise. And also, if you could leave us a rating on iTunes or various other places where you get your podcasts from, that would be very beneficial. It helps us grow immensely. But yeah, EGX, it was a great experience, and we look forward to doing it again.
On that note, though, do make note of all the people that we talked to and do hunt them down, because... support indie games. Indie games need to support just as much as indie podcasts do.
Yeah, I feel like they're paving the way for where games are going next. And definitely don't forget about them. They are making some fantastic stuff. But
hunt them down, check them out, and just look for some of the things that we didn't have time to mention.
Awesome.
But yeah, I've been Brian.
I've been Rob.
And I have also been a Rob. Thank you for listening to us.